Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Today on Happy Sad Confused, Evan Peters on his first Sundance, X-Men Dark Phoenix, and his collaborations with Ryan Murphy. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused, the second edition from the Sundance Film Festival. I'm here catching a lot of great movies, catching up with some of my favorite actors and filmmakers. That's the fun part about Sundance. It's like you walk the streets up and down and you just like, I bumped into Zoe Lister-Jones on the street the other day. You bump into people just like randomly. They're all like kind of running around with different agendas, whether it's seeing movies or doing press, and not to mention all the colleagues and writers and correspondents. It's just kind of a fun get-together. So while I've been here at Sundance, my 12th Sundance Film Festival, if you can believe it, I barely can. I've seen a bunch of movies. Yesterday, I caught a triple bill. One of the films was American Animals, which is the reason I'm talking to the guest here on this edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. American Animals, for a little context, it's an ensemble film. It's kind of it's a drama with a fair amount of comedy in it too. It's from the director that did The Imposter, which was a very acclaimed documentary a couple years ago. This is his first kind of fictional narrative, although it is based on a true story, just meaning the first non-doc, I guess. And it stars Evan Peters, Blake Jenner, the guy whose name I will always mispronounce, but I love him, Barry Keough, I want to say. He starred in Killing of a Sacred Deer in Dunkirk. He's such a great young actor. And Evan's kind of the ringleader of a group of four young men who are just kind of aimless and just kind of like looking for profundity in their boring lives, and they decide to steal some rare books, and everything goes wrong. These guys are kind of idiots and don't know what they're doing, and it's an entertaining film. It's a really good piece of work, and Evan in particular, I want to talk to because he's excellent in the film, but also he's just somebody I've noticed a bit. I won't claim to be an American Horror Story expert, but I know people love him on that show. I certainly love what he's done in the X-Men movies. He did a very fun sketch that if you guys have not caught, he did a sketch with me a few years back for the last X-Men movie. It was called X-Men Anonymous. So if you want to Google that one, X-Men Anonymous, Josh Horowitz, you'll find a really fun sketch that Evan Peters just killed it in. So ever since he did that, he's had my undying respect. This conversation was a lot of fun. I will mention a little disclaimer, and I apologize for this, but it's the nature of the beast when I'm recording these things in Sundance. This was in the middle of like one of these like lounge areas. to set the scene for you guys that haven't been to Sundance, up and down Main Street are all these kind of like the CNN lounge, the Lyft lounge, the Stella Artois lounge, all these sponsored kind of places where, they bring the celebrities through, they take photos, they give them free shit, and they just kind of hang out. And they also do interviews in those spaces. So this was done in the Grey Goose, lounge or whatever. And it was a little loud. It was crowded, particularly the first like 10 minutes, I would say, of this conversation. It might be annoying. I apologize. Hopefully the mics did their job, but there definitely are people like kind of like hanging over us. So apologies for that, but bear with us. It gets better. People leave, it gets quieter. And it's, we actually got a decent chunk of time considering the insanity of Sundance. And by the way, it was Evan's birthday. How beautiful is that? So great to get to know Evan a little bit better. I know his fiance, Emma Roberts, pretty well from interviewing her many times over the years. Got a chance to catch up with her as well after I talked to Evan. So, two guys that I'm big fans of. So very cool to talk to Evan about this new film, American Animals, that just premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, as well as, I had to talk to him, of course, about the X-Men films and in particular his upcoming role in X-Men Dark Phoenix. So he gave me a little juicy, bit of goodness on that one that I think you guys will probably enjoy. And just to mention also, for those of you that are curious about what I'm seeing here at the Sundance Film Festival, I saw the new Gus Van Sant movie last night. Don't worry, he won't get far on foot, which I thought was very good, which was, Gus Van Sant is kind of hit or miss, and this is definitely, I think, more in the positive column for him. It features an amazing performance by Joaquin Phoenix playing this real-life cartoonist who, became a paraplegic, and it's a very powerful story involving, he was an alcoholic, a 12-step program, and also has Jonah Hill in a hell of a supporting performance, and one of our favorites, Jack Black, also was in that. Maybe my favorite film I've seen at Sundance so far is kind of an unlikely one. I mean, I was expecting to like it, but not as much as I did, was a movie called Juliet Naked. So look out for that one. I'm not sure where it's going to end up, but it's directed by Jesse Peretz, who did Our Idiot Brother a couple years back. And it stars Ethan Hawke and Rose Byrne and Chris O'Dowd. It's based on a Nick Hornby book. And it's just, it's not going to change the world, but it's a very delightful kind of romantic comedy. And everybody's very charming in it. And I was kind of charmed by it. And it was a nice, in Sundance you see a lot of dark, depressing stuff. It made me laugh a lot. And it was just like a fun 100 minutes at the movies here in Sundance. So that's at the top of my list right now, but I'm going to see a lot more films and I'll make some more recommendations, I'm sure, as the festival continues and as more podcasts pop up. I'm hoping to record at least one more podcast while I'm here. So I'm going to toss it over to this conversation with Evan Peters. Again, apologies for the loudness, but if you are so kind, remember, review, rate, and subscribe on iTunes. Do us that favor and enjoy this conversation with Evan Peters. Now entering the podcast studio of the Grey Goose Lounge in Sundance.
Oh, wow. This is lovely.
You've never heard my podcast introduction, Evan. That's
no,
how I do
that's,
it.
That's beautiful.
That's my podcast voice. Do you have a podcast voice?
For relaxing times, try Grey Goose times.
You're on brand. You're on message. Very good. Yeah. apologies to the guys listening. Yes, there are people talking. We're in a bizarre Sundance lounge. It's a mixture of the beasts. This is what it is.
Yep.
Is this where you imagine you'd be spending your birthday? Happy birthday, man.
Oh, my God. Yeah, thank you. No, I keep forgetting that it's my birthday. I had no idea. I'm thankful. I'm really grateful. I've always wanted to come to Sundance. I've never been to Sundance. This is my first time, and it's snowing, and I love the snow, so... Yeah, it's great. Yeah,
you're getting the authentic Sundance experience. You're getting full-on major blizzard conditions, a beautiful, the Women's March down the street.
Yeah.
You've got all good mojo going on around
great.
Here.
Yeah, it's great.
So you obviously have friends, acquaintances that have come to Sundance before.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that it was something that you hoped to get to at some point. I mean, just first of all, because we have a little time here, I'm curious, growing up was, were you a film geek? Were you kind of, did you follow, were you aware of what the Sundance Film Festival was as a kid?
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all. I loved, Tommy Boy and Dumb and Dumber and The Mask and, cartoon, all the Disney movies I would just watch. So, and then growing up, Forrest Gump was about as heavy as I got.
Right. Tommy Boy didn't get it into Sundance, sadly.
No, it didn't, unfortunately. But yeah, it wasn't until, I was 15 and then went out to L.A. and started acting that I realized that there was such a thing as Sundance and independent films. And then obviously it's grown. It's much different than when it started from what I hear.
Yeah.
And I'm just happy to be here, man. I'm very excited.
So I was at your big premiere yesterday. Congratulations on the movie. The movie's American Animals.
Thank you.
It's a cool film in many ways. I mean, we'll tease up a little bit of the storyline. It's based on a true story. The four principal characters in this kind of crazy, bizarre heist gone
really bad. And right. not necessarily, you know, we're not talking about, like, the guys from Heat pulling off, like, the crime of the century. These are guys that are ill-equipped, to say the least.
College students.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, first, I'm just curious, did you see the movie before you got here? Was that
yeah, I got to see it on Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, still, I mean, I would think you've been to all manners of different kind of premieres and events for your films, but this one being your first Sundance, being the fact that they're the actual principals are going to be in the audience with you, is that, like, are you pretty chill about these kind of events, or were you going
I was just happy for that they were happy. I'd heard they saw the film before. I mean, they didn't see the final version, but they saw a version of it, and it's very similar to what it was. But they were very, you know, grateful and thankful, and it explains why they did it. You know, Bart Layton, the director, you know, had a correspondence with them when they were in prison for quite a while, and got a lot of very vulnerable, revealing letters that sort of told, you know, why they did it. Each one had their own reason, obviously, but it was, you know, this sort of unrest with the way that the world is, you know, the sort of plan that you have to go through, and at least for Warren. And Warren's just this, you know, sort of crazy energy. He has all this energy, and his brain works in such a way that he sees no limits.
Right.
You know, so he looks past that, and I think he channeled it into such a such a lost, bad way.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really sad, and I hate that they got 7 years. You know, they were kids, and they channeled it wrong. And yes, they did a bad thing, and yes, they hurt someone, and it's obviously, you know, reprimandable, but 7 years felt like, you know,
it changes a life, especially in that time in your life.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, they did get the transformative experience that
they got a movie out of it.
Not the one that they hoped, but they did get something.
Yeah, that alters everything.
But, it was good to see it. You know, I've been hanging out with Warren a lot and the other guys, and they're great guys, you know, and they've been telling stories of, you know, prison and you know, what it was like, yeah, it's really fascinating to talk with them, because they're just these normal guys who threw themselves into this insane situation, and just it ended tragically, unfortunately. But I guess the story kind of folded in on itself, and now they're here at Sundance in a weird way. But I have to say, it is a cautionary tale. It's not glorifying, you know, doing heists at all. It's about having this unrest and sort of maybe channeling it into different areas. Like Warren was saying, you know, the movie's been cathartic. He said about BJ, you know, that, you know, she saw the film and it sort of helped her understand better why they did what they did.
Yeah.
And Warren, hearing that, got relief. You know, he hasn't talked to her since this all went down.
I'm sure.
I'm sure he wanted to apologize and say what happened, and I was an idiot, and I don't know what I was thinking. And so it was sort of a relief for him. You know, he's very emotional. This whole thing's been very emotional, and high anxiety and a lot of stress for them, I think.
Yeah.
And it's so vulnerable how much they've given. And the story, you know, everybody is pouring out their heart and telling the truth, and or their version of the truth, whatever that may be. It's been really cool to see it with them and have them. From the beginning, when I read the script, I loved the fact that Bart was going to include the actual footage of them, you know, because that, to
had
me...
Had he shot that already?
He shot that first.
God, so that's literally in the script, like,
it was
what
in
they
the script,
said
yeah,
as
and
themselves.
When I read it, and I was like, this is incredible. And you know, of course, when I would tell that to people, they'd be like, oh, I don't know how that's going to work.
Right.
And I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, I kind of love it, because it adds a sort of gravitas to the situation.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it real. It makes it, you know, you look at it and it adds an intensity. And when you watch the film, Bart has done... I was shocked at how well he did it. You know, I thought, okay, maybe, you know, I don't
no,
know, it could go wrong.
That can be a little hokey.
Oh my
and
God.
Just,
like, yeah. But he seamlessly wove it, and I'm very proud of to be a part of it, and it's very cool how he did it, because, you know, there's humor to it, there's intensity to it. Like when you actually get to see them go through the heist, you know, there's just that much more intensity, because you see that it is real, and you see the real guys and their faces and how much they were invested in it. So
yeah.
It's long answer, but it's been a very cool experience to work with them in that regard.
What's cool also, you know, I think you guys talked about this a little bit after the screening and a little bit just now, is it's relatable in a way where, like, we're all trying to find our place and make ourselves feel like we aren't leading a boring life. And just sort of like standing out. And, like, that's especially at that key age, you know, whatever age they were at that point. I'm just curious, like, where you were at as a teenager, as a young man, was acting a way to kind of, like, channel whatever unrest, whatever... restless spirit you had?
Yes, absolutely. And I used that for the film because that's, I wanted to, we moved to Michigan from St. Louis, and I was there in the summer, and I was like, well, you know, my dad just sort of blew up the whole St. Louis world by having to move for this job.
Right.
So, like, our whole family, everything has been changed, and I didn't realize that it could be changed. And I thought, well, hell, if you move to Michigan... and we all move there, I would go, I want to be an actor, but maybe I can move to California and we could do that. And maybe that's possible. I don't know. I always loved performing and in school, in grade school, with plays and stuff like that. But to actually do it was sort of this insane dream. I don't know what I was thinking, really. But
ignorance is bliss when you're that age,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, totally. Well, that was the thing. Like, I was totally naive and ignorant and just sort of went out there and tried to do it. But yeah, absolutely. It was definitely something to change and to do something different. And I really liked the idea of doing something different because I was sort of scared to just do that. And I thought, you know, well, life is very finite, and I want to make the most of this short time that I have here. And I go, what's the best way that I can do that? And I loved acting, and I love movies and TV. My schedule would revolve around watching my TV shows and, you know, all the movies that were coming out and going to Blockbuster. I absolutely loved going to Blockbuster. I think more than going to the actual theater.
Right.
So
I miss that experience, don't you?
My God. It was one of my favorite things
I don't know about for you, but for me, ostensibly a short trip would turn into just, like, an hour roaming up and down the aisles. And just sort of, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like, I need to rent four or five of these.
And it was like all that, like, you had it all. You were like, these are all the action films that I can watch. I have a plethora to choose from. Here's all the ones I want to watch. And you could sort of go down the aisle. And look, now I'm almost overwhelmed at what's on the internet and what I can download and stream. And it's terrifying, you know? And it's overwhelming. And I sit there paralyzed on Netflix and watch the goddamn screen for an hour trying to pick what I want.
Well, and not to mention, I don't know about for you, I feel this, like, you know, being, you know, we're on different sides of it, but, like, being someone that consumes and loves pop culture, like, you feel like you hear everybody talking about the 15 TV shows you need to be watching. I've created, like, lists for myself, and I'm like... it's become a task when, like, it should be a joy.
That's the thing. They're like, have you seen this? Have you seen that? And I'm like, no, I haven't seen it because it takes 13 hours to watch that. And you know, once I start that, then someone else throws another one at me. Yeah. And it is overwhelming. It's become like a task. I have that same list. And what's funny is that when I'm sitting in front of the TV trying to figure out what to watch, I don't even go to that list. I try to pick something that's on the damn screen in front of me. And then the list gets even longer.
Yeah.
So it has become completely overwhelming. But I guess I should look at it as now there's that much more to choose from.
Riches, yeah. So what's the last thing you watched then? Having said that, you're staring at a blank Netflix screen.
Godless.
Oh, let's see. That's on the list.
But I'm not even done with it. I'm halfway through it, and I really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff Daniels is incredible in it, and it's sort of beautiful to watch.
Yeah. Scott Frank's an amazing writer.
It's gorgeous. It's interesting. I love Scoot McNairy too.
So he's awesome.
Just love him.
So are you in the middle of the latest Ryan Murphy? Joint in New York right now?
Yeah, we started the first two in November, and then we go back in, I'm not sure when yet, but I think maybe end of February, March, for a good 5 months, and then we finish the rest.
Nice. And this is Pose?
Pose.
So Kate Meyer is one of my favorite people.
She's incredible.
She's the best.
She's one of the strongest, most powerful, inspiring women I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I feel so weak. Like, she's like,
she's so
weak. Like, dude, you got to grow some balls. And I'm like, yeah, I guess you're right. Okay, cool. I should. Yeah, totally. So she's given me a cool strength that I've never had before. So it's been cool to work
and
with
talking
her.
About, like, you know, seeing, finding a cool strength. I would imagine, like, this ongoing collaboration with Ryan Murphy.
Yeah.
This is this guy who clearly sees in you all these different amazing manifestations. Must be such an ego boost, an opportunity, just like to find a collaborator that can push you and give you opportunity in different ways.
Yeah, I guess it is that. It's also, I feel slightly underqualified in a weird way. Like it's overwhelming, the opportunities and chances that he gives me, and I'm like, I don't understand how or why you're doing that. And that's not like a false modesty thing. I feel overwhelmed a lot of the time. But, you know, it's cool because I can challenge myself to sort of rise to what he thinks or sort of expects of me, which has been helpful in helping me grow and step outside of this box that I would always love to live in, you know. So it's been pretty amazing to have that.
It seems like, I mean, you were talking about American Animals, I mean, doing some armchair psychology. Like, it seems like you're gravitating towards projects and people that are pushing you and pushing the form and, like trying interesting shit out, for lack of a more articulate way to put
it. I'll be honest. I mean, that's not something... That's just been by the grace of God. I mean, I wish I could. I mean, I'm so grateful to be able to say that, you know. But that's just...
Dumb luck.
That's just dumb luck. I mean, being able to work with Ryan has been incredible, you know. So I've been able to. Oh, it got very quiet.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just dumb luck. But it is exactly what I've always wanted, you know. So in a weird way, I don't know if it's from wanting that and then it just sort of happened and some manifest destiny, but I think rather just dumb luck.
Who was the first celebrity you ever met? Do you remember? Or worked with, or
Louise Fletcher.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I did a short independent film, or not a short independent film, a small independent film with her.
It was regulation length.
It was 90, regulation, 90 plus length. called Clipping Adam, which was, I had an awesome mullet in that. But it was it was very cool. She played my grandmother who helped raise me.
Yeah.
Lovely lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like having worked with the plethora of talent at this point, because, you know, we can call you a veteran, but at this point you've been working for a bit.
I don't know about veteran.
Really?
No, I do. I mean, I've been, you know, since I was 15. I'm 30. Well, 31 today. But I feel still like I'm just, you know, this is my first Sundance.
Right.
You know what
still,
I mean? So it's a slow slope, you know? It's a long, slow slope upwards. So that's good.
What about the fact, I mean, it's a great ensemble, and I love all the guys in this, but you are the lead of the film, and that's a moment. That's an interesting, like, I don't know how many leading roles you've had in film.
No, that's true. I mean, well, Clipping Adam was one, but I was 15, I had no idea what I was doing. And then, you know, Pirates of Somalia, which, you know,
that was pretty recent.
Yeah. And then I feel like Horror Story last year was a great lead. And then this, which we actually shot before Horror Story last year, but this is, you know, this is a but this is still an ensemble.
It's definitely the four guys.
But they're giving me more chances and more opportunities and more scenes, which is, you know, more responsibility, but I'm learning. It's what's so cool and what's so frustrating at the same time is that, you know, you shoot it and then it takes months before you can see it and you can critique it and go, well, that was okay. And you go, oof, that was not, you shouldn't have done that at all. That was terrible. So it's been a great, you know, it's been great to be in these lead roles because then I can watch it and see what I'm doing and what's working and what's not. And I have to say I'm excited to do more because I feel like I'm learning so much more and giving myself that room to grow has been hugely beneficial and made me excited to work more and to work harder. So in the right areas, so I can get rid of some areas that, you know, are not working anymore. But
are there like habits or tics that you are trying
big
to break?
Time. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
one I should look out for and say, oh, there you go.
Oh, there
Evan,
he is. There's the classic Evan Peters tic.
A little wink to camera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, trying to kill all of those basically. So, which is great, you know. That's such a cool opportunity and experience to have that I'm so grateful for. So I'm thankful for these direct, you know, Bart and Ryan for continuing to give me opportunities to be able to do that. So
did you learn a lot from working on X-Men Anonymous, the historic MTV sketch that we did?
I did actually. Yeah.
You committed. You wanted the wig.
I wanted it so bad. So bad.
That was a blast. Hopefully we can have some more fun on the next one.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about, so was the X-Men call, was getting that gig, was that a big moment? You talk about being
huge.
Raised on Blockbusters and seeing that kind of stuff.
That was huge. I loved the first X-Men when I was a kid, and then the second one. I got the call, and then immediately after the call, I jumped on the couch, and I was just so excited to be able to be a part of these movies, because I'd grown up, and another thing, you know, I loved growing up with special effects movies. Yeah. I loved CGI so much, because I was shocked and couldn't figure out how they did it,
yep.
You know, and once I figured it out, I loved watching the behind the scenes where it was all green, and then you saw them paint it in, and I go, holy crap, look what they can do now. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it just takes you that much further into the alternate reality that is movies, and I was so excited by that. And then when I found out I was going to be doing it, doing Quicksilver, I thought, oh, that's cool, I'm going to be fast, you know, that's great. I have no idea how they're going to do that, because I'm very slow. But what they did was pretty incredible. It was a genius idea where, you know, everybody's frozen, and it was very Matrix almost.
Totally.
But you know, then I sort of move in real time, and everybody's frozen and moving at a very slow speed, and they shot on that phantom camera, and everything was green screen, and it just, the way they did it, I had no idea it was going to be that way, and I was shocked when I saw the final thing, and I was also shocked at the response that people had for it. People really...
It was the standouts. It was like the one thing they had to talk about.
They
yeah.
really, really liked it. And I was, again, through dumb luck, got to be a part of that.
Right.
You know, I had no idea that was going to be that. And I was very, again, grateful to be a part of something like that.
So being like an effects geek, have you done performance capture yet? Is that something that you would want
to... No, I would love to do performance capture. Andy Serkis was like...
Oh, my God, those... Apes movies are
unbelievable. He's unbelievable.
The fact that the last two Apes movies in particular, I thought the first one was alright, but the last two that Matt Reeves has directed.
Oh my God.
Like,
when you watch
can't
it,
see
you're
any,
like,
you don't see
wait
anything.
A second. Like, how is that ape actually doing that?
Yeah.
You know, it's shocking how good it is.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
It
and
really
it really
is.
Makes you excited and kind of giddy inside. You're
yeah.
like, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And I'm excited, you know, it's funny, I keep thinking about it, but I think, you know, they're going to eventually start making, when virtual reality gets that way. Because what I love about special effects movies is that it takes you into that world, much like Avatar, whatever, you know. But I think, hopefully, you know, eventually there'll be some sort of movie where you can sort of live inside the movie, like a video game. But then you have, you know, Nicole Kidman acting in it, and like,
yeah.
you know, you have a fantastic, almost like immersive theater, like
totally.
Where you've, you know, but it's a movie version or a video game version where you can choose your reality that you go through.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I don't know if you've been in any immersive theater, but there's like incredible actors who do not break character and make you feel like you are actually
we're
a part.
We're not talking about cheesy dinner theater. We're talking about
no,
oh,
this
well,
is
like, the
this is like the
I've
like Sleep No More,
yeah,
and then there was
a
great
one.
There's a great Halloween one that I went to
yeah.
in LA where they like threw you in a van and
no,
drove
totally.
You around, put a bag over your head, and all this insane stuff. But like the actors and actresses
they
were incredible
in.
Because.
Yeah.
They did not break character, and you could say all sorts of stuff to them, and they'd be like, all right, come with me, and then they'd put you in timeout or some crazy thing. It was unbelievable,
yeah.
and I love that feeling of being able to live in some sort of alternate reality. It's why I love acting.
Yeah.
So I hope one day that they do that. You know, I don't think they'll ever get rid of the art of cinema,
no.
you know, the screen and the sound.
I think it's all additive
theater,
at this
but,
point. Yeah, there's going to be...
But
it is... We're at a, if we're talking in 20 years, it's going to...
Oh, my God.
Movies are going to look...
Oh, it's definitely going to happen. Because I want that to happen. If nobody else is doing it, I'm sure James Cameron's going to do it before everybody.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it would be pretty genius.
Sounds like you need to get you in a James Cameron movie. I think you'd be keeping
I'm,
out the entire
I'm down
time.
For James Cameron.
Have you ever met with him?
No. God, no. No. I mean, I would love to, but...
That's amazing.
No. Oh, man. It's genius.
How was Dark Phoenix to do? I mean, that group is a fun group.
It's a great group.
Did you burn down Montreal? Did McAvoy yeah. kill anybody?
They were just kicked out of Montreal for
oh
life.
Oh, my God.
No, it was actually very... very tame, you know. Simon directed this one
right.
and came in very prepared, very professional, and everybody was, it was a different energy on set, and everything got done like clockwork, and it was very seamless, and everybody, I think, was a little bit more level-headed. So it was a very pleasurable, light experience, and you know, I think the film is going to be incredible, I hope, knock on wood, because it just... You know, Hans Zimmer scoring it. I mean, he is. I don't know if I was supposed to say that or not. But anyway, you know, Simon has surrounded himself with incredible people, and Simon knows this world better than anybody. And so it was just cool to see him. He's like, you know, he's so happy and so in his element in that world, and then also being able to direct and like sort of guide everybody in this way. I was very happy for him, and I think he's going to do, I think it's going to be great.
Do you, I mean, you know, without making the subject too uncomfortable, I mean, the last two X-Men films, you know, were obviously very important to your career.
Yeah.
You know, helmed by Bryan Singer, who's been going through some stuff.
A lot,
some major issues that obviously could continue to crop up for him. We'll see. But, and you know, and I've heard stories, not even talking about, like, stuff offset, but, like, that his sets can be a bit chaotic and have been. There have got to be lessons learned for you from going through those experiences. And also, I'm just curious, like, what your perspective is on having worked on those two with a filmmaker like him, who obviously is a great talent, but has some issues.
I just think there's a level of, you know, this business is very chaotic in and of itself. And nothing is for certain. And everything is by chance. And, it, you know, luck is when opportunity meets preparation. And I think that it's very important to be prepared and be on time and be professional and to be respectful. And I think it's so, I think it's great what's happening now in the business. I really do. I have to say, I think it's a good thing. And I love strong women, and I'll follow them anywhere. My mom's a very strong woman, and I'm marrying a very strong woman. Right. You know, I love them and I appreciate them, and I think they're better actors. I honestly do, and I'm sure they're better directors. You know, I think.
Why do you think that? You think just like more in touch, more willing
they're
to go
so,
to places.
They can communicate better. They're more in touch with their emotions. Yeah. They're smarter. They mature faster. It's a very long list of why women are better than men.
Two cavemen talking to each other on a couch in the Grey Goose suite,
stupid
basically.
Exactly. What are we doing here? So I think it's a great thing, it just speaks, you know, I think it's just you're supposed to be respectful and professional because, you know, this business is so chaotic. It helps to have a little bit of stability and confidence that things are going to be a certain way when you get there on set. And that is something that I hope stays and changes for the better and stays that way for the rest of time.
Talking a little bit in terms of, I know we're not going to reveal too much plot-wise for Dark Phoenix, but I was just curious, like, well, two questions. Like, one is, how are you and Magneto doing? How are you and Fassbender doing?
We're good. You know, we're good.
It's a complicated relationship.
We're not, you know, quite speaking that much, but I think
we're done with the characters now, or the you and Mike?
No. Well, both me and Mike, but the characters, I think they're fine. I think there needs to be more talk, maybe father son therapy sessions. But I think
smell
they're,
an MTV
they're doing
sketch,
all right.
Maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
Was there fun stuff for you to chew on this time? You were talking about the standout sequence in both the last two films. Like, is there? Do you have to kind of up the ante and do another one? Is there that expectation, or did you?
I hope we do another one. I really do.
Well, I would hope you know.
I was. I have no idea what's going to happen.
To clarify, I meant the bravura sequence. Your slow mo.
Oh, is there another one of those?
Yeah, did you do that?
You'll have to see.
Okay.
It's a very different movie, you know. Simon's directing it, and he wrote a very different script, and it's Dark Phoenix.
Right.
So she's very central. Sophie's very central to this movie, and it's going to be great for her. So I'm very excited for her.
Did you get to spend any time with Chastain? She's pretty.
No, I didn't. No. I don't think I got to meet her yet. I know. I've seen her before.
About strong women that can do anything. She's the best.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, got quiet for us again. well, just talking, because I feel like I've keyed into you as, like, a legit film fan, which I love. Are you, like, what's any films in the last year that you've loved? What have you been geeking out on?
So with just what's come out, I recently watched Call Me By Your Name, which I thought incredible. Timothée Chalamet deserves an Oscar, I thought. I think he's incredible. Army was great. It was directed beautifully. Yeah. I thought it was a gorgeous film and made me feel like I was there, which was awesome. So I love that. And then I saw Darkest Hour, which, wow.
Yeah.
Maybe he deserves the Oscar.
He should have five Oscars.
He should have five Oscars. But it was that transformation was unbelievable. And just to sort of live in that skin and how under pressure he was and vulnerable he was during that time was captured beautifully by Gary Oldman. So I mean, that was awesome. I love that performance. And that's one day I hope to aspire to be that kind of actor where you can sort of get in that skin. And another film that I watched was The Phantom Thread, which, who get in skins, Daniel Day-Lewis, whose voice in that I love. I mean, it's closer to his real voice, but it's still like, it's almost like he's sewing or something with his voice. It's so weird. So, maybe I'm looking too much into it, but that's what it felt like. And I was like, that was incredible. And I love the movie, and I love Paul Thomas Anderson. It gets weird at the end.
It does.
So you got to bear,
you
gotta,
places
gotta bear
that you
with
don't
it.
Expect.
You're like, whoa, that was, what? Okay.
Yeah.
But I was on board. I was like, I don't mind this. I love this kind of stuff that's going on.
My shorthand on it has been, I think it's Punch Drunk Love meets Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, in a weird way.
A little War of the Roses in there too. It's pretty.
Yeah, and it was just such a gorgeous film, and I love Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, everybody loves Daniel Day-Lewis, but I just really, it was nice to see him be closer to what I think is maybe him.
Right.
I'm not sure, but at least it seemed like he wasn't putting on, you know, it wasn't American, you know, he didn't have a beard
or a mustache or anything. Whatever. Yeah,
it was very cool to see him in that light.
Yeah.
And it made me want to rewatch some of his older films where he is sort of more.
Before he started to get into the transformative shoe cobbling.
The shoe cobbling, yes, I know. But that's really cool. I love that he does that. I hope he doesn't retire.
Oh God, me too.
Or I hope he comes back out of retirement. So I guess he is retired now. But
I guess so. But I don't know why he announced that he takes 7-year breaks between films anyway. No one would have noticed.
You're absolutely right. I know. He could have said it in 7 years when it was.
Exactly.
But I think he must just be a way of cleansing everything.
Right.
In a weird way.
So are you happy where you're at? I don't mean literally sitting in the Grey Goose Lounge on your birthday.
I
mean,
very happy here. I can live here.
Everyone's left too, by the way.
Yeah,
I feel like they've abandoned you.
Yeah.
where's Evan? In terms of like the opportunities that you're getting right now, I mean, we talked about, you know, getting to be kind of, you know, a lead in some things. Obviously, Ryan Murphy sounds like he's going to cast you for life, which is a good thing to have in the back pocket.
Awesome. Yeah.
Like, what are you looking for or asking, like, Team Evan Peters to look out for? Is there kind of a criteria right now?
Oh, well, I think ultimately it seems that when I don't know. Like this dumb luck thing keeps happening, but it's because I'm working with great directors and great producers and great storytellers.
Yeah.
You know, it's the story. They're picking the stories essentially, and I'm just being able to jump on board, luckily.
Right.
But you know, I ultimately I want to work with great people like that, so I can learn more. I want to work with great actors and actresses and directors and writers, because they know how to tell all the great stories and they know how to do it the right way, and that's what I want to learn. I mean, obviously, I love great stories and want to tell them, but I don't know how to tell them. I don't know how to write them. I would love to. I think I have great ideas, but are they great ideas? I don't know. So I think I need to learn a little bit more from the people around me to get the confidence in order to put myself out there in that way. Ultimately, I would love to write and direct and tell stories of my own, but I think at this stage, I'm just going to the University of Hollywood, I guess.
Nice.
That sounds so lame. But you know what I mean?
No,
like,
totally.
Like, yeah, trying to learn from everybody around me.
Well, no, that's the best thing for any artist, or probably most fields, is surround yourself with people that are better than you and just sort of like soak it up. And
exactly.
Eventually you'll rise to their level too, hopefully.
God, I hope, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're well on your way, man. I always enjoy talking to you, and I appreciate, talking to a fellow film geek, clearly, and a talented guy that is willing to do stupid sketches from now and then. Hopefully, we'll do another one soon.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Enjoy your birthday, man. Good to see you, buddy.
Thank you, man. Thanks. Appreciate it.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.